You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
It's a part of the passing of wintertime and moving into spring. You open up the windows or you step outside and you hear them, birds singing. That's the sound of the male western tanager, a songbird that migrates thousands of miles once the seasons begin to change, heading to the mountain west for springtime. But maybe you've noticed over the past few years that spring seems to be arriving earlier than normal. Flowers blooming, insects coming to life, sometimes months ahead of when you would normally see those things happening. Birds are noticing these changes, and researchers are too. A recent study has looked at the effects of climate change on the seasons and found that by the time many migrating birds reach their destination, the food sources they search for have already bloomed or flown away. And so the consequences of spring starting sooner for the western tanager and for many other migrating birds could be drastic. Welcome to KCBS In-Depth. Broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app, I'm Mary Hughes. To help us take a closer look at what we're seeing in the world of migrating birds and how climate change is altering their world, I'm joined by Morgan Tingley, Associate Professor of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at UCLA. Morgan, thank you so much for joining me for this conversation on In-Depth.
Mary, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I think it's important sometimes with some of my guests for the people who are listening to get an idea of what it is that you do and what you're looking at to kind of help open up why we're speaking with you. So if you could, give a little bit of insight into the work that you do.
So the world is changing very rapidly around us, and I'm an ecologist, so I study the natural world and how it responds to the environment. And so really broadly speaking, what I do is I study how birds are responding quite rapidly in this changing world. And a lot of my research focuses on climate change. So I study all the various ways that birds are responding to a changing climate, including through changing where they live, changing when they do the timing of their events, all sorts of different responses.
Well, and that's something, you know, because on this big level, I think when people hear, oh, climate change, you know, you're thinking sort of in generalities of, well, the planet's getting warmer. And obviously that's going to affect a lot of things or a lot of environmental aspects. But it is interesting to me when we start focusing on particular aspects that are being affected. So when did you, as a researcher, start noticing those effects beyond the big, broad conversation and started thinking, wait a minute, how is this affecting birds?
So, I mean, to take you far back a bit, you know, I think when I was in college and learning about climate change impacts, like my view of what climate change impacts were was like the image of a polar bear, right? We used to talk a lot about polar bears. Not that they're not like in need of our care and interest, but like the idea was that the ice was literally melting out underneath their paws and they would have no place to go. And so when I started getting involved in science and being an ecologist in college and starting into graduate school, I was interested in how humans were changing the environment because I know that humans are doing so. But I was focusing on sort of landscape change and like direct manipulations of human of the environment. And it was only in during my PhD where I started to sort of focus on climate change impacts more specifically, where yes, humans are changing the environment, but it goes through many, many loops and cycles. And the way that climate change is changing the world is quite complex. And so for my PhD, when I started, I was focusing on how a warming climate generally is changing the distributions of birds. That is to say, not necessarily where a bird decides to build its nest, but if you think about a species as a whole, where they're found versus where they're not found, that's changing. And the broad generalization is that birds are moving, and other animals too, are moving towards the poles. So here in California, that's moving farther to the north. And they're also moving higher up in elevation, moving up mountain. So actually, my PhD was focused in the Sierra Nevada, where I was studying how species were shifting their elevational ranges over about the last 100 years.
And I think that connects very much to this most recent study and to the and it incorporates the work that you've been doing, is that those patterns are changing, and climate change is sort of the definitive reason for this, or it seems to be at the very least a part of it. So now, for those of us who haven't looked into what birds do and their flight plans, their migration habits, and all that, typically speaking, if we're talking about the birds that we see here on the western side of the United States, typically speaking, what are the migration patterns of birds on this side of the country?
So the United States has sort of three major migratory flyways. And so these are geographic areas where birds really concentrate and have been flying these routes for thousands of years. And the geography kind of concentrates them in them. So there's an eastern flyway, there's a central flyway, and there's a western flyway or Pacific flyway. In the spring, that often actually brings birds up along the coast. And then in the fall, it actually the fall migration is a little bit more inland. So birds will follow the Sierra Nevada down or the Rockies down. But here, like, I don't know what it's like up in San Francisco, but here in Los Angeles, like, spring is really starting to be in full swing right now. The birds, like, April is our heaviest migration month for a lot of small songbirds here in California. And so I notice things are starting to change in my backyard. I'm starting to hear obviously a lot more song, but a lot of birds right now are returning to North America, having spent their winter in Mexico or farther south even, basically in warmer, balmier climates. And then they come back to North America to take advantage of sort of this pulse of resources that we have here. And maybe, you know, in San Francisco and Los Angeles, that's not quite as drastic a pulse. But obviously, if you go up to Tahoe, or even more so, if you go to Alaska, you know, it's like, you don't, no offense, but I don't want to live in Alaska 9 months of the year. But 3 months of the year, actually, it's pretty cool.
You know, and I'm glad you sort of mentioned being able to, look outside and notice that, the changes. I one thing that I saw was that people were noticing, like flowers and buds and blooming happening sooner this year alone than what is normal. And I've noticed that as well. I have roses in the back, and they were starting to bud last month, which is wild.
So, you know, here in California, our perceptions of the seasons are really drastically affected by rain and precipitation. But we are here in California, like the rest of the country and the rest of the world, we are experiencing warmer years, record warmer years, year after year after year. And one of the pervasive effects of that is an earlier spring. And so we see this across forms of biological life. So we see the plants flowering earlier and the leaves coming out earlier. We see insects that are timed to emerge to take advantage of spring. They are coming out earlier. And the birds, including our migratory birds that spend their winters far away, they are returning earlier and earlier. And one of the things that scientists like myself are really interested in is, well, like, are these things lining up? Are they all happening synchronously? Are they pulling apart in time? And as we know, all of these these animals and plants, they are shifting in time. They're shifting their, we call this term phenology. Phenology is the seasonal timing of events in nature. So we see this phenological shift happening earlier and earlier in the springtime, but we don't necessarily know if all of these things are happening simultaneously at the same rates. And so we could have essentially a spring that kind of gets torn apart as some parts like trees that are really sensitive to local temperature can move earlier and leaf out earlier much easily, as opposed to a bird that, say, is down in Costa Rica and it doesn't really know what's going on in California. It just has something in its brain telling it to move north.
Well, and so, you know, what is it that we are seeing now as far as the effects of that? The migration is, it's being affected by this. So what are birds that are, you know, they're making their way as they normally would, what are they running into since we are seeing such big changes in what's happening?
So when we go out and we look for evidence of species shifting their migration earlier in the spring, it's pervasive. We see it everywhere we look. And so we know it's happening, but there's a spectrum. There's a spectrum of how sensitive different species are to this. And this relates to the great diversity of birds we have and that spectrum of diversity in birds in terms of where they spend their winters, where they spend their summers, and how big their migration is. And the birds, this is not surprisingly, but the birds that actually sort of migrate more short distances or they winter farther north, say in northern Mexico, they don't have so far to come, they seem to be actually quite good at tracking earlier springs. So they are almost able to keep up with plants. So if the leaves are coming out 5 days earlier, then the birds are arriving, you know, 3 to 5 days earlier. But then there's some species that are migrating much farther away, say they're down in Colombia or Ecuador in the winter. They migrate much later, they migrate much faster, but they seem to be almost insensitive. They're getting earlier a little bit on fraction, but for the most part, they're just falling behind. And so they're arriving in the spring, and spring is just, it's moved on beyond them. It's moved ahead of them. And what we're trying to figure out is like, well, what's the consequences of that? Like, what does that mean? How much can birds, you know, if they arrive and they're late, can they just speed everything else up and still be okay? Or are there going to be really major negative consequences for them?
In-depth will return after a moment. In that respect, looking at the consequences of this, what are they? Like, is it a matter of, well, there's just not enough resources available at that point in time? Could it affect, you know, breeding or anything like that?
Yeah, resources is the key word here, right? And so when birds are falling behind, they're falling behind in what way? Well, they're falling behind really their food. And so most birds, most particularly a lot of migratory birds, are insectivorous. So they eat insects primarily. And also, even though adult birds will eat a wide variety of things, so we have some birds that primarily eat berries and some birds that really eat seeds, pretty much every bird of this pat, not an egret or something, not a fishing bird, but most of these songbirds, all those songbirds, even though there's adults, they will eat lots of things. They will feed their young insects. And so birds really are cued in to take advantage of these seasonal pulses in insects that happen in the spring to early summer. And so we've actually gone in and done some studies looking across North America from really long-term monitoring data to look not at the timing of migration, but the timing of breeding. So when eggs hatch and how that timing, the timing of eggs hatch, matches or not in different years with the timing of spring in terms of vegetation and trees. And what we find is that when those two things pull apart, when the birds become misaligned with the trees and presumably then misaligned with insects, we just don't have the data on insects. When those things get pulled apart, breeding productivity goes down. That means that birds on average are laying fewer eggs and fewer young are hatching and leaving the nest each year. And so this can have real consequences that falling behind, if you're falling behind in your migration and you can't catch up, which means that you can't breed quite fast enough and you become mistimed with your local seasonality, it can have real consequences for the population trajectory in the long term.
And I think that's something that has been noticed over the years now is sort of overall numbers when we're talking bird populations do seem to be on the decline. And, you know, obviously, as we've, you know, talking in this conversation, climate change could have a definite effect to not just traveling patterns, but those abilities to be in the space they need to be in order to procreate. Would you say that that could be the reason why we're seeing globally numbers dipping below what we're used to?
It potentially is one reason. A handful of years ago, there was a real landmark study that came out that was sort of eye-popping for a lot of ornithologists, conservation biologists, the general public, which was this finding that over 3 billion birds had been lost in North America between now and the 1960s. So the late 1960s is when really there were started to be long-term continent-wide monitoring programs for bird populations. And so scientists basically looked at all the numbers from the late 60s, early 70s, looked at the recent numbers, calculated trajectories, tried to calculate population sizes, and came up with this number that about 3 billion birds were had been lost, which is a real monumental. It's a number that we can't fathom. We can't understand those numbers. And undoubtedly, there's lots of things contributing to that. Lots of different reasons for population declines. Certainly, climate change could be involved and is involved to some extent. Our research suggests that these potential declines in populations that come from mismatch is probably mostly going to be a problem for the future still. So the major impacts of this mistiming in the spring has not yet been felt, most likely. And for some species in some areas, yes, probably. But for birds as a whole, and we expect this really will be affecting pretty much all birds, this is going to be more something that we might see 30 to 40 years down the line. As you said, that, you know, the trajectory of birds is not great, right? Bird populations, for the most part right now, are not going up. And so we kind of have like 15 to 20 years to stop that trajectory before this climate change impact that really we're kind of locked into, before that starts to take effect.
So one question that seemed interesting to me in looking at a lot of the studies, or most of them that came, you know, beforehand, when we're focusing on birds and songbirds in particular, is that there seemed to be a big focus on birds and migratory patterns on the East Coast. And they weren't really looking at the western part of the United States. And I was curious, is there a reason why there has not been as much of a focus there?
I think part of it is due to complexity. So climate change impact research is very complex. And trying to say, we observe this phenomenon and this phenomenon is in response to climate change, is a lot harder scientifically than maybe it sounds like when I say it. And so there's part of it when we are, as scientists, when we're trying to figure out how to do this, there's two things we're thinking of. One is, well, how simplistic or complex do our hypotheses have to be to try and understand this process? And also, where's the data? And do we have enough data to actually do it? And the East Coast has been kind of easier to say yes for both of those situations. First off, people have, well, there is a longer history of collecting data on bird distribution and abundance and occurrences in Eastern North America than there is in the Western North America. There's also, if you look at sort of long-term monitoring programs, so for instance, things like the Breeding Bird Survey, which is a standardized monitoring program for abundance in North America, it just is the data are denser on the East Coast. And even more newer programs like citizen science programs like eBird, which I've used a lot of for my science, the data is denser on the East Coast across a bigger area. But it's also the East Coast, and this is a dig at them, the East Coast is more simplistic. Not the people and their thinking, but the environments are more simplistic. It's mostly a kind of somewhat homogenous gradient of forest and flat areas from Florida to Maine. And yeah, there's the Appalachians, but for the most part, it's this kind of more simplistic homogenous environment. So if we're looking for shifting distributions or shifting phenology, it's a simpler landscape within which to try and understand these tough questions. The other thing that's simpler about the East Coast is that when we think about climate change, we can pretty much restrict ourselves to thinking about temperature. And as I said to you earlier, out here in California, so much of our phenology, like what's flowering, what's fruiting, is based off of rain and based off of precipitation. Just think about like when it gets green in the winter. That's not based on temperature and it getting cold in the winter. That's us getting rain, our winter rains. And so phenology here and through large parts of California in the West is like this complex intermixture of temperature with precipitation. And so when we're trying to think about how the natural world, say birds, are responding to changing climate in the West, life has to get more complex because we have to think about that interplay of temperature with precipitation. And so that's why it's like scientists have been like, okay, let's start and go to the easy place first before we challenge ourselves with the West Coast.
Do you think we're going to see more more research and looking at information and data from the West Coast now, especially as climate change keeps making this push?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think, well, there's a lot of reasons for it. For one, we actually have more range-restricted, conservation-oriented species here in the West. We also have more extreme environments here. We have deserts and high mountain elevation areas that are more at risk from climate change. And so if you actually look at where the need is, we're obviously still learning a lot about how now the natural world is responding, but like if we actually look at where we need more science, it's out here in the West.
You know, I had a recent conversation where I was talking with someone about the effects of warming oceans and how that is affecting the coral reefs and the work that's being done to try to find corals that have more resistance to heat. And is there a way to, you know, I won't say get ahead because as you just said there, we're sort of in it, but to mitigate some of that so that there are corals that survive into the future. And I think a lot of times we don't realize the interconnectedness of all that's going on the planet and that's being affected by the changes that we're seeing in climate. So when it comes to birds, and I mean, who among us doesn't love hearing the song of a bird outside? It's one of my favorite things to wake up to. What can we do to try to make things better, right? You know, these next 15 years, as you said, what do we need to be looking for and what can we do?
You know, this is where we acknowledge the difficulty of individual actions towards solving climate change, right? Like there's a folly in thinking that we as individuals can stop it. Of course, we can make differences, but it's hard to stop without really large scale international agreements. In the meantime, there's, you know, as I said, there's lots of reasons why bird populations are likely declining. And some of those things we have really actual good control over. There's lots of studies showing the impacts of like windows and window collisions on migratory bird populations, of cats being outside, free roaming cats outside. These are things that we have control over, like real direct is individuals control over. Like when we're building a home, like thinking about actually, well, maybe we don't need an entire glass wall next to a forest. There's things that we can do that really will help help populations, and that might allow them to have better adaptive capabilities to deal with this changing climate. Because we know, yes, climate change is relatively unique in geological history as far as we know now because of the pace, like the fast pace with which the world is warming. At the same time, right, species have been adapting to changing environments for millions of years. Not all of them make it, unfortunately. But many species have successfully dealt with really rapidly changing environments in the past. And so, like, if we want to help them, we need to give them as many resources as possible. And often that just means populations, that means numbers. Give them the give species, help them have as large populations as possible, and that will give them better adaptive capacity to deal with this really large thing coming down the pipe.
So you have hope then for the, I was going to say, the birds across the world, but just in particular for the Western side of things, for the birds that travel through here, you have hope.
I do have hope. I do have hope. You know, the one thing about the West, which is great, is that we actually have a lot of natural areas. We have a lot of natural protected areas, both along the coast and in the mountains. And those habitats are just really, really key to a huge diversity of species. And that on its own will help a lot of species.
Fantastic. That's how I like to wrap up my conversations, especially ones on an environmental slant, is with hope and what can be done going forward. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk about this with me on In Depth. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure, Mary. Thank you for having me.
And you can find this episode of In Depth and past episodes of In Depth online at kcbsradio.com. Just go to the podcast tabs and look for In Depth. You can also hear In Depth episodes on the Odyssey app. Download the app on your smartphone and favorite KCBS radio. Thanks for listening. For KCBS and In Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
Listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.